Accession number 20783, Reel 2.
Cyril Handley, Reel 2.
Oh, well, I think that what the flamethrowers were doing, there was lots of snipers about, and I think their main use of those was to aim into the building's windows to drive all the snipers out. After that, like I say, the war had gone on. What happened when we went to Normandy, we were in the 31st Independent Tank Brigade, and by now we were into the 34th Independent Tank Brigade. And I know my memories of going all through France, like I say, on back of this transporter, into Belgium. And I can remember going to a place called Mol, but we didn't know fighting there. And really, mine gets a bit blank at that time. But we ended up, I remember, like lots of British units, in the Eindhoven area. And we went to a place called Best, which is just north of Eindhoven. And of course, at this time, of course, you were getting, this was the time of Arnhem. And we never got to Arnhem. I think the farthest we ever got was to Nijmegen. I mean, we had nothing to do with the fiasco of Arnhem at all. And I know we then came back to Eindhoven.
Were you in any fighting on the push towards Arnhem?
Not really. Not as I remember. We could well have been a little bit, but nothing that I can really, you know, say that I remember. Because the next thing I remember, really, in Holland, the biggest action we ever fought in Holland was Roosendaal. And the 9th Tanks were involved very much at a place called Nispen, which was north of Roosendaal. And we lost quite a few tanks there. And but I, one of my biggest memories is actually going into Roosendaal itself, going over a little bridge that had been laid, you know, a tank bridge. And I know we got over, and they were telling us that, I remember Geoff Pearson saying to me, I wonder, but there would be an 88 waiting for us around the next corner, and because we'd been told there was 88s in the town. And anyway, we turned the corner, and instead of 88 meeting us, all these Dutch people were waiting for us with apples and goodness knows what and welcoming us. And seemingly they pulled out that morning, the Germans. So we actually did no fighting actually in Roosendaal itself. Or at least I didn't, anyway.
Did you have any fighting at Nispen?
Oh, yes. At Nispen, a big friend of mine won the military medal there, Cyril Rees. What happened, an 88 got them, and the tank commander, Jock Tomney, who now lives in Canada, he had the top of his skull taken off, and his crew got him out, and their gunner was a chap named Ginger Kirk. And I know Jock Tomney always reckoned that he would have died if it hadn't been for Ginger, because he was about one of the strongest men in the regiment, and actually he managed to get him out of the turret. And Cyril and the rest of the crew, Norman Hopkins, Don Foster was in their crew by that time, and they managed to get him out and away. And what happened, he was the troop sergeant, and our, the troop corporal, he had to go, you know, there. And I know we then came back to Roosendaal, where we stayed.
What fighting were you involved in at Nispen?
Well, I was in the same action as what I'm talking about now. You know, the old battalion was, you know, was in action around Nispen. And like I say, it stays in my memory because of the troop sergeant's tank going up like it did. And of course, a friend of mine, Cyril, getting the military medal for what he did there.
What kind of targets did you have at Nispam?
Can't really tell you. When you're in Churchill, a lot of your work was ushering infantry into places. I mean, really, what the action was to free Rosendale. I mean, I don't think ever that we were in what I call a tank versus tank battle. Well, we weren't, you know. I mean, basically, your work was infantry support. Because, as you know, in tanks in those days, you had reconnaissance tanks, cruiser tanks, you know, the faster ones. But, I mean, a Churchill flat out was only 12 to 13 mile an hour.
How exactly do you work with infantry?
Well, sometimes the thing is you perhaps fire over the head into a wood to help them into woods. Sometimes they actually went into action riding on the tank. More often than not, they perhaps go behind the tank. But we were known as an infantry, it was known as an infantry tank, Churchill was.
What were the problems of effecting wireless communication as far as you were concerned in the tank?
Well, not a lot, because what happens, I don't know if you know the 19 set, but it has what they call an A and a B set. Now, an A set, you were in contact with the battalion, but the B set was just into troop. You know, it got a very small range. But quite truthfully, when you're actually in action, to be the job I was doing, without any shadow of doubt, an active service, in my mind, is the best job there is in a tank. Pure and simply, that you're that busy, you haven't got time to think about things. Because, I mean, you hear the commander say, you know, and the gunner fires, because what happens to an operator, you're also the gun loader. So you used to put the shell in, tap the gunner that the gun's loaded. And of course, if you was letting, I mean, you were that busy, you've got to keep your set on net, you were loading the gun, and really, you got oblivious to what was going on outside, really. Perhaps sounds a bit, you know, big, but it's quite true. I mean, if you're a driver, I mean, you know, driver stop, and then he just doesn't know what's happening, he's just looking through his periscope. But, I mean, he's just driving, so to speak, whereas in the turret, you're that busy that you really get a bit oblivious to what is happening around you. I don't know if that makes sense to you. But
yes. Is your head stuck out of the turret?
Oh, no. Not on action, no. Your head, the commander has his head out, unless it gets really rough, and then he, you know, hatch down. But basically, most commanders have got their head out. But, I mean, the rest of the crew, of course, are, you know, hatched down.
What rank of commander was in your tank?
Oh, my commander's only a corporal. You see, in a troop, you have a troop officer's tank, troop sergeant's tank, troop corporal's tank. And I was in the troop corporal's tank.
So three tanks?
Yeah, three tanks to a troop.
Which did you prefer, having the corporal?
Makes no difference, really. I mean, quite truthfully, I was in a troop. We had a sergeant, Jack Tomney, who was really, he was first class. Frank Hodson, he was a really first class tank commander, in so much with him, he was about the oldest in the troop. I mean, where we were in their 20s, and very early 20s, Frank was in his mid-30s, which them seemed old, you know, I mean. And I think he could have even been a little bit older than that. And Jock Tomney, the troop sergeant, was good. We had a chap named Lily, who was the officer. It was a good troop. You know, it really was.
Would the officer be a lieutenant?
Yeah.
What else do you remember about Rosendale area?
Well, everybody... The biggest memory of Rosendahl, we were there for a month. The biggest memory of the lot is that we were put into a school. We'd been in the school about two nights, three nights, and all of a sudden it went up in flames and we had to get out. We got out quite easy, to be honest. We come down some steps, you know, all the flames are going and smoke, but no problem, we got out. But some of the other chaps went, and a chap named Davis, he jumped out of a window, and he was a corporal, Corporal Davis, and injured himself, and he died from it not long after. You know, they were taken to hospital, and I think he died two or three days after. And then we had to be billeted elsewhere, and we were billeted at in a cafe. And lots of the people made friends. I know we used to go, because then we didn't know actual action at all. We got re-equipped, and you know, some of the crew were replaced. Some of the crews were replaced. I know some of the. It's not too far from Antwerp, and the chaps used to go into Antwerp. I never did, but I know. Some of the chaps were in a cinema there one night, got it by a doodle bug, and one chap got killed there. But the rest of the time, it was quite a nice, restful time. We made quite a few. I know I used to go down to a house, and the chap in the house, he worked for the railway, he was a station master on Rosendahl station, and Jock Pearson, the driver of our tank, got very, very friendly with a girl there, and the same, and this girl, if you like, I married a Dutch girl, but this is just before I met my wife, and he went for the, you know, he really fell for the girl there, and I know after we left Rosendahl and I'd met my wife, she used to translate letters for him, you know, to send, and quite truthfully, everybody in the Ninth Tanks has got a soft spot for Rosendahl. I think, basically, we were there, I should say we were in Rosendahl the longest of any place where we were. And we would have made that welcome. And I know we were in Rosendahl basically a month. And we then went from there, we went round to Brunsum. And of course, when we got to Brunsum, it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we pulled the tanks up in this street, and all of a sudden a voice said to us, "Would you like a cup of tea?" In perfect English. Little did I know that I was going to marry the same person. But anyway, we went in, and into the house went myself, Fitz and Jock. And we were asked if we'd like to stay there. But really, like us, in the house was just the three of us, the wife and her mother. And we were there a week, 10 days, I expect. And I know we had to go into Geilenkirchen. And coming back, we got the tank I was in got hit again. Nothing serious, but we managed to get back, and the tank wasn't right. And the battalion went on, and we stayed in Brunsum for repairs. And I asked the RSM of the Remy there if I could go where, you know, back to the billets I was in. And he said, as long as I reported back on, you know, parade at 8 o'clock in the morning, I could. And anyway, when I got there, there was two sergeants from the Hampshires were all billeted there. But I think, so I stayed there about another week, and then that was it. I joined the regiment again, and I think, if I remember right, we were then we had to go to Hazlitt. But when we got there, the Ardennes started. The Christmas offensive at the Ardennes started. So we had to then, we went back to Liège and on into the Ardennes.
What happened to you in the Ardennes?
Not a lot. It wasn't tank country. It was that snowy and, you know, snow and cold that basically we were just in a village there. Did very little fighting, except against the cold, perhaps. And it was while we were just outside of Liège that I remember on Christmas Eve we were round a nunnery and the nuns came out, and I know we gave them some food, and we had a Christmas meal in the nunnery.
Were they short of food?
Yeah, well, everybody at that time was, weren't they? You know, Belgium, Holland, I mean, I mean, to give them coffee, anything like that. They were, you know, a tin of corned beef, they were in their element, weren't they? But I know, while I was there, they drew the first lot of leave. And I drew about, if I can remember, that I was number 14, and I was one of the first to get leave. And I had to report back to Liège. And while we were in Liège, you could have any room you wanted. You could have the bridal suite and the best hotel, because at that time they'd been doodle-bugged like mad. And anyway, and we went from there. I was going on leave, and we went down to Calais, then from Calais to Folkestone. And that was in the January. That was in January, I'm pretty certain it was January. And well, it must have been in that area, beginning of January, that, because to come on a leave from the Ardennes.
So you spent leave in Basel?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. How long was that for?
7 days. Then you had to report back to Folkestone. And when I do definitely remember that when I got back, the battalion was in Eindhoven. And then we were all in civvy billets in Eindhoven. And it was from Eindhoven that we then got ready for the Reichwald Forest. Because the Reichwald Forest was in February. And when we got to the Reichwald, one action we had, we went in at night, and one of my best friends, he was troop sergeant, a chap named Norman Hopkins, he was the operator, another big friend, Cyril Rees, he was the driver. And the sergeant by then was a chap named Brooks, Harry Brooks. And he had replaced Jock Tomney, who'd been injured at Rosendal. And I know we were going up in line, and all of a sudden their tank went up in flames. And out of it got Hoppy and Cyril. I can't really remember Cyril getting out, but I can remember Norman Hopkins getting out, and the sergeant, Sergeant Brooks. And what happened, it's one of my biggest memories of the war, actually, this. So if I'm carrying on a bit, just stop me. And anyway, it sounds a far-fetched story, really. But Frank Hodgson said to me, get some smoke down quick, Tom. So we laid a load and load of smoke down. And out of this smoke, all of a sudden, come a tank. Now, all I can say, it was a tank. If it was the troop officers or that, I don't know. But it ran over Norman Hopkins. Run right over him. Anyway, the troop sergeant, Harry Brooks, got into our turret and said that Norman was dead. Now, bear this in mind, in the morning, it was on Norman Hopkins' 21st birthday. That's one, you know. Anyway, Jock Pearson said, come on, Tom, let's go and get Norman. And anyway, the troop officer, Mr. Lilly, said, no, you're not. I'm not losing any more members. We go out. Anyway, we left Norman there, presumably dead. But what had happened, he lay there, his eyes were, you know, he was, by now he's blind, and I think it was a sergeant in the Black Watcher that heard somebody moaning, and it was Norman. And I had a letter from him from Aylesbury, where they did skin grafts and what happened, and he survived. And the only thing you can think is that there must have been something very hard and where he lay in front, and as the tank went over him, you know, it never touched him. And like I say, we still meet up each year. And I've been to Cardiff 2 or 3 times. But I did, the first leave I got, he was sent from Aylesbury to Church Stretton. And on a couple of occasions, I did go down to Church Stretton to see him. Cyril was also wounded. Never saw Cyril Reese again after that until after the war. But Cyril Reese, funny enough, on the Cenotaph Parade, he now always escorts Norman, you know, is it like his eyes when St. Dunstan's go past. And those two have stayed very close friends. A matter of fact, last year, if I can deviate for a minute, Norman's got one of these timeshares, and he had a timeshare at Langton Matravers, which is not far from here. And we went over, and Norman had never been to the Tank Museum. So he rang up and said he was blind and could he come down. And we had one of the finest days at the Tank Museum you could ever imagine. They really laid the red carpet out for Norman. We got there, we had our own guide all day. And I mean, although I've been in the Tank Museum a few times, I never knew as much as I knew that day. And we broke off, I expect we got there about 10 o'clock. We broke off at about 1, and we had an hour for a meal. Then we went back in the afternoon for another couple of hours, then back to Langton Matravers, then back home. And it was a good day, you know, and it brought all that I've just been telling you about, you know, home, you know, because obviously we talked about it. There we are.
But had he been blinded in the accident?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We carried in the tanks around the turret. We used to carry phosphorus grenades. And I think that they did a lot of damage. I think they must have, you know, when the tank went up, I think they must have gone off. Of that I'm not certain. But the memory in my mind is still pretty vivid. You know, because when it's one of your best chums, not only that, I mean, Jock Pearson, who was the driver of our tank, he and Norman were really big friends. And I know, well, they were. But we've lost complete track of Jock. You know, I did hear that he died, but how true, I don't know.
Whereabouts in the Reichswald did this incident happen?
Oh, that I couldn't tell you. As far as I was concerned, it was. I know the idea was to get through to a place called Gok. But as far as I'm concerned, we went out from Holland into the Reichswald, and it happened. I mean, to me, it's just the Reichswald Forest, end of story. I know lots of Churchill tanks are still there, because after the war, I know my wife has been to the Reichswald on holiday with her sister in that area, and I know there's still, well, then there was still one or two tanks left in there.
What was the character of enemy resistance at that time?
Never met much, to be honest. I know one of the sergeants got killed by a sniper one night, you know. You did hear tanks. I can't actually remember a lot of actual fighting, to be honest. You know, like I say, this incident I've told you about, yes. Another chap named Armitage, he got shrapnel in his back there, but that was from artillery fire. And real fighting, it was, but the forest was eerie. You know what I mean? It got to you. You know, the forest itself got to you. And, you know, because you never knew what was going to happen. You didn't know who was where and what was, you know. I mean, there was only church. I mean, the thing was, you got to remember, the Radical Forest was really part of the Siegfried Line. And I don't think for a minute that the Germans ever thought the tanks could get through. And I think it was only Churchill tanks that could have done. And even then, I can remember the pine leaves and that used to get under the tracks, and the tracks used to, you got to, your turret wouldn't turn because the track was up to stop, it had stopped the turret from actually turning. But there we are. I'm sorry I can't be more explicit than that, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the incident I've just told you about, that to me was the Reichel Forest, you know.
What were weather conditions like then?
Damp, wet, proper February weather, you know, which wasn't very pleasant because with it going dark early, you know, you were there in lager at night. Wasn't good.
Were you sleeping in the open?
You could do, but a lot of us did. We used to sleep on back of the tank, you know, on top of the engine hatches. We set a, you know, we'd sleep on there. The driver very often used to sleep behind his seat. There used to be a big toolbox, and they used to sleep on that.
What happened next?
Well, after the Reichel Forest, really, we never saw a lot of action, because the war was going on then. But I remember getting up to the Rhine. We're getting to the end of the war as far as the 9th Tanks is now. And I remember we were on the bank, and all that we were doing was firing from the bank, over the bank, into a place called Wesel. And I know the engineers put a bridge across the Rhine there. We were firing into Wesel, then of course the 25 pounders, and then the ones behind. But when we got across there, I mean, Wesel, never mind a house standing, I don't think there was two bricks together. It was just one huge pile of rubble, to be honest. And after that, well, that was the last fighting, as I can recollect, that the 9th Tanks ever did. Because we ended up at a place called Bentheim, near Oldenzaal, across the border from Oldenzaal. And it was there that we heard that the war was over.
Any celebrations for the end of the war?
The 9th Tanks went from Bentheim, and we went to a place called Lengrijk. And that was where the 9th Battalion broke up. And the war was over then. And I think we heard that the war was nearly over at Bentheim, that they've passed, that's right. And when we got to Lengrijk, that was when we heard that the war, no, we were there for VE Day. We were definitely in Lengrijk on VE Day. And there was no celebration, as I remember. There were, well, people had a few more drinks than they would have done. And that was about it. I mean, next thing we knew, we had a bit of a concert, and the 9th Tanks broke up. And most of the chaps went to the 4th Battalion. I know that Jock Pearson did, Bernard Fitzpatrick did, but I stayed with the 9th for about another 3 months. I went to a place called Gouma, and we were on a scheme called Barleycorn, really. That was repatriation of prisoners and getting people back home You know, the Russian, the trains used to pull in there with all German prisoners, and they used to come in, you know, into this place, Guma.
How do you spell it?
G-U-W.